Mike Trout is moving to right field. Jose Altuve is working in left field. Aaron Judge said he would bat anywhere in the order. Rafael Devers refuses to DH. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Tuesday, February 18th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. Again, firstpitchpodcast.com. Send all your friends to get their daily MLB updates. And we're going to keep doing our divisional previews. We're going to talk about the Oakland Athletics, just the Athletics, a little bit later. But first, we've got some position changes, some refused position changes, and some injuries to talk about. And I think the big one here, Rafael Devers, in a press conference yesterday, repeatedly, I watched the press conference. If I remember right, 11 of the 16 questions he was asked were about either moving off of third base or moving to designated hitter. And he was very insistent that he is not moving off of third base, not to go to first, not to DH. He is going to play third base. And then Alex Cora, meeting with the media later, indicated that just because the previous front office promised him third base did not necessarily mean that this current front office agrees. So what do you make of this? Is this something where the player is within his prerogative to kind of be like, yeah, I want to be a third baseman. That's how I came up a third baseman. I want to stay a third baseman. Or is this a, if you were truly here to win and try to be a leader, you would do whatever the team asked if it helped the team win?
Yeah, I think this is a little bit different situation than the Marcus Stroman situation we talked about last week, where Marcus Stroman said, I'm a starter. I'm going to start. I'm not coming out of the bullpen. Whereas this one, Rafael Devers is kind of good enough to determine whether or not he plays third base or not, because at the plate, he's good enough. Defensively, he might not be, but I still don't like it. I don't like it when any player does it, because it's not a great mindset to have. Kind of, you touched on it there. It's not a team mindset. It's not a, I want to win a championship mindset. It's a, I want to do me and I want to do what's best for me, and what's best for me, in my opinion, is staying at third base, according to Rafael Devers, even though, again, he is statistically one of the worst defensive third basemen in baseball, and he would probably have better offensive numbers if he moved to DH or first base, because he wouldn't have to focus on being so bad at defense as often. And I really like what Alex Cora said about how the last regime may have promised you that, but they ain't here no more. And so it's just a bad situation all around. And I think the Red Sox kind of got themselves into it by bringing in Alex Bregman without having that conversation, having things set in stone with Rafael Devers. Hey, we're bringing in Alex Bregman. You kind of suck at third base and he doesn't. So can we pivot here?
Yeah, the context on that defense, by the way, we touched on this when we talked about this last week when Bregman signed. Since 2017, Devers is a minus 21 run value at third base. And that's with that weird 2019 season where he was plus 13 that we don't understand. If you assume he was just a zero that year, he'd be at negative 34. In that same time frame that Devers was at negative 21, Bregman was at plus 12. So that's 33 plus 33 run value better over the last couple seasons. And this could be a short-term thing. Like Bregman could leave after, you know, like relatively quickly. I kind of think everybody sucks here, right? Like this is when you read all of those, what is it on Reddit? Like, am I the asshole? And they're always like, you know, the answers are like, not the asshole, like they're the asshole, or everybody sucks here. Everybody kind of sucks here, right? Boston probably should have done more of this work ahead of time with Rafi about where he's going to play. He probably, when the media asked him he probably should have said, you know, I'm going to get with Alex Cora in the front office and we're going to figure out what's best for the team. He didn't have to come out so strongly. The media didn't have to ask him 11 of the 16 questions about this. Like, they didn't have to just harp on it over. And if you watch the whole thing, it's just them finding different ways to ask the same question over and over. Like, I probably would sound pretty brusque about it after the 10th time I was asked too. But everybody kind of sucks here, right? This could have been handled a lot better. And even when we think that the Red Sox are becoming finally choosing to be a big market team and flex the muscles that they have and act like the big boys, they still have this self-imposed gunshot wound of, we couldn't even figure this out. We couldn't even have a conversation with him and figure it out before we all got in front of the media and started talking about this. You know, Cora, I understand, you know, he's right. Like, it was a previous front office that promised Rafi he'd be a third baseman. At the same time, maybe that's not the best way to approach this conversation when your third baseman is already so insistent publicly that he's not going to do it. Like, everybody sucks in this situation. And this whole thing was handled wrong. I do think at the end of the day, the best thing for Rafi to do was play first base or DH. That is the best thing for the team from a defensive perspective. We've talked about how bad this team is defensively. And you could see Story maybe being a little bit better. You have a top prospect who can slot into second base. You have a bunch of other second base options. Like, the best thing for Rafi to do for the team is to play DH or first base. He's 28 years old and he's got like a decade left on his deal. I understand why he doesn't want to go ahead and move now to DH, but we'll see what happens. This could be a one-year blip and Bregman could be gone after a year. And even if he had worded it that way, like, you know, if we need me to make some sort of short-term move for the better of the team, I'm open to doing that, but I consider myself a third baseman. Even that's a better way to word this.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I 100% agree. All around, it's just a bad situation, from the journalist aspect of it to the player aspect of it to the organization aspect of it. But I also agree that, yeah, in the best interest for the team is Rafi Devers moving off of third base and moving to first base or being a designated hitter. It's just – it's a bad situation, and I like the way you put it, that the Red Sox – shot themselves in the foot yet again. Whenever we think they're think they're doing something to improve, they shot themselves in the foot. So it's the Red Sox way.
Yeah. Flip side to that, Mike Trout, literally minutes after we posted yesterday's show, we manifested this. Oh, he announced he will be a full-time right fielder moving forward. Kind of makes you have to assume that center field's going to be some combination of, you know, Joe Adele, Mickey Moniak. Adele has the athleticism. He has the speed. I even kind of think he has the arm to play center field. And I do like the idea of Mike Trout at age 33 moving to right field. It's just so much less running. I remember this anecdote that stuck out to me back when Brandon Nimmo was still playing center field for the Mets. It was either Brandon Nimmo or Jeff McNeil. And he was talking about when he plays a corner versus when he plays center. And they had the motion tracking on how much running he did in a game. And it was something like he ran 80% farther when he played center than when he played a corner. Because you're backing up everything. You're backing up both corners. You're making your own plays. And then you're running in to back up throws, you know, to second base, from home plate, all that kind of stuff. And so I love the idea of this, of Mike Trout moving. Do we think there's a possibility that moving to right and making no other changes, you know, still stealing bases, still trying to, you know, all, being aggressive on the base path and all that, do we think that'll be enough for Mike Trout to play, let's say, 100 games next year? Because he even said he'd occasionally DH and things like that. Do we think that's enough for it to get 100 games out of Mike Trout next year?
Yeah, I can see him breaking 100 games, moving to right field. And real quick, I do want to say hello, Mike Trout. Thank you for listening. Thank you for hitting that subscribe button and turning on that notification icon. I think he can break 100 games because, like you said, it's a whole lot less running. There's going to be a lot less wear and tear on his legs and on his body in right field than in center. And if he's DHing pretty frequently, which he can now do with Shohei Ohtani off the team, and he could have done last year, but he was hurt. It's going to raise the chances a lot of him playing 100 games. I do think that in his older years, and I can say that because I haven't reached 33 yet, that he does need to calm it down on the base pass a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just because while he is has been a very good base stealer in his career, and that has been a big part of his game early on in his career. I mean, he's getting older now. He can rest on his laurels and just hit a bunch of home runs, and then he don't have to run much at all. He can just jog.
There you go. Other possible position moves. Jose Altuve talked to the media yesterday. He's been working in left field. He did say that this was not something that came up very late because of an attempted move to re-sign Bregman, right? Chandler Rome reported that they approached him after the season and asked if he'd be open to time in the outfield. He said he's working on it now a little bit. It's going to evolve throughout the spring. And if he had a preference on where he played, in contrast to what Rafi Devers said, the quote here is, quote, "No, I want to play. I want to be in the lineup. I want to help this team win. The goal remains the same, which is winning. So we're going to go ahead and do it." And by do it, he means play wherever they ask him to play. Second base, left field. He said he doesn't care. "I want to be in the lineup. I want to keep hitting doubles, triples, and homers." So, we're not previewing the Astros today, but the Astros outfield, to put it politely, sucks, right? Like, when you look at all the projected lineups, the bottom three hitters in their lineup are their three outfielders: Chaz McCormick in right, Ben Gamble in left, Jake Myers in center. Is moving Altuve to left in replacement of Ben Gamble or whatever, and then sticking like Mauricio Dubon into second base, is that better than just sticking Dubon into left field? Like, is this a thing you need to do? Or is this just we want more versatility and more options with Altuve if somebody gets hurt? Like, do they need to do this? Because it's not like they have too many infielders now. This just makes a hole somewhere else.
Yeah, I think it's just moving pieces just to say you moved pieces, really, because it doesn't make any sense. And if any of y'all do follow me on Twitter, you've seen that I have been very adamant against this and have been calling out multiple different reporters saying, "Oh, that's never going to happen." Here we are at spring training, and
he's out there. There's video of it.
So it doesn't make a lick of sense to me. And it's just moving pieces to move pieces because you're taking a massive hit to your defense in the outfield. Even though the offense in the outfield isn't great, the defense in the outfield is much better with Jose Altuve not out there. And so
not in left field.
So it just doesn't make sense. They know that they know that they're taking a massive step back in this year, especially after trading Kyle Tucker and losing all kinds of other pieces, and that the dynasty's kind of over, and they're just like, "Oh, let's move things around."
Proclamation there. The dynasty is over.
little teaser for an episode later in the week whenever we talk about the Astros, but let's just move Jose Altuve to the outfield and cause a distraction and get people off of us losing as much as we're going to.
Yeah. You know, my thought process is when you have a guy that is turning 35 in the season and has been in the majors for 13 years, the best thing you can do is make him exert more energy during a game. Yes. The proper way to handle that is to move him to a more physically demanding position, right? He's running more. He's not like, it's more reaction stuff and like quick twitch sprinting kind of things at second. Maybe there is something there where they're worried about the change of direction and everything, but left field's a lot more running than second base is. And my first thought is like that makes perfect sense as he's turning 35. Yeah. Let's ask him to run a lot more in a game. Either way, it's fine. going from a player that is moving possibly to a team that is scrambling, like I did that, the New York Mets, they got word Frankie Montas has a high grade lat strain. He is going to be shut down from throwing for 6 to 8 weeks. And then after that is going to start with a standard kind of spring buildup, like a 1 month to 6 week buildup before he's back. So if you kind of project out, if he's back to throwing by the end of March, he's probably not in games until mid to late April at best. For a team that we were already questioning the depth in their rotation, and they kind of went for a quantity over quality thing here, how big of a deal is Frankie Montas being out for a couple months probably to the New York Mets?
Yeah, I mean, you and I have kind of talked about it, written, both of us have written about it for Sports Illustrated over the past week, that their rotation is a big issue because they don't have a true ace, especially with Kodai Senga coming off a year full of injury. Even though many expect him to be a true ace, he's not going to have a true ace's workload. He pitched 5 innings in the regular season last year. He's not going to.
And then he got blasted in the postseason when he came back without rehab starts.
Yeah, so he's not going to turn around and qualify for the ERA title or throw 180 innings. And so their rotation is a big, it's not good. And losing Frankie Montas, who is probably their second or third best pitcher, is taking a big piece out of that rotation. And it's just getting that much worse because, like you said, 6 weeks is the end of March, the first day of April. 6 weeks from today is April 1st. 8 weeks is April 15th. So if he's out for the long term of that timeline, he's not coming back until the middle of May. That's a whole month's worth of games plus.
Assuming he can be ready to go in a month. Yeah. Some guys need more than a month, right?
Exactly. And so it's a big hit to their rotation. They should have done a lot more to bring in more guys for depth for their rotation, because that's going to hurt them in the National League East, where the best play.
Yeah. I think the immediate beneficiaries of the ability to start Griffin Caning is probably going to be in the rotation. You mentioned us writing for SI. I wrote a thing about how he's embraced the Mets pitching lab. So there is some hope that he can kind of do some stuff here. Possibly Tyler Megill. You have to wonder if this means they go out and they reunite with a guy like a Jose Quintana. Do they go and sign him and bring him into camp? But right now, your Manaea, Senga, Peterson, David Peterson, Clay Holmes, and then Caning are your 1 through 5. Maybe Paul Blackburn's another guy that fits in your 1 through 5. But to your point of the workloads, last year of these guys, 3 of them broke 100 innings. Manaea had 181 and 2/3. Caning had 171. And Peterson had 121. Holmes had 63. You mentioned Senga having 5. Blackburn had 75. And so the projections, and this is a Fangraphs thing. On Fangraphs, the projections are incredibly optimistic, right? They have Holmes throwing 165, so 100 more. My experience is often those relievers converting to starting get about 130 in a season, so I think that's way too high. They have Senga at 162.
Right.
You know, they have him barely qualifying for the ERA title on 26 starts. Feels very optimistic. Like, it's just, yeah, they need more, especially with Christian Scott out. Like, they need more options. You know, Megill is going to be a guy they're going to have to count on. They've got Justin Hageman on the 40-man roster, and then they've got some NRIs in camp. But guys that barely got AAA time last year and weren't maybe necessarily that great, Brandon Sproat, Blake Tidwell, Don Hamill, I think those guys are all part of the next wave of homegrown pitching, but I don't know how ready they are, at least early, to take on starts in the majors. And so, yeah, this is – the Mets got to do more. I made the argument on the Braves pod, on Braves Today, on – I think it was on Monday in the third segment, that the I would stack the Mets lineup up with any other lineup in the division, right? Like, I would line them up with the Phillies lineup and the Braves lineup as far as just – how dangerous that lineup is and how they can score runs. Rotation, I had them a tier behind those two teams before the injury.
Right.
And after the injury, you kind of have to wonder about, like, just you got to do more here. You got to add more pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, the Fangraphs projections are very, very, very optimistic. Like it's crazy. Ooh. And just the speculation around the New York Mets in general, especially after the season that Sean Manaea had, if you look at his Baseball Savant page, there's a lot of blue on it. So it's not going to be a fun season in Queens as far as pitching goes.
And then some of the issue you have is if those guys do hit those numbers, how effective are they in October? Like, you know, if they're all pushing, if Senga goes from 5 innings to 165, if Clay Holmes adds 100 innings to his workload from the previous year, how effective is he in October? Like, right. You may get to October and just not have any gas. We saw Cleveland do this. We saw Cleveland's pen. Those top guys all put up like 70 innings in the regular season, and they were just gassed in October, and they got shelled. So how effective is it going to be? All right, last couple of minutes of the show here. We're going to go to the Athletics. We're doing our previews of the American League West. As you can tell by not having them on Monday, we don't have them finishing in last place. This is a really interesting kind of group here. They did add some free agents. Like, they signed people. Rotation, they added Gio Urshela, cut by the Tigers, picked up by the Braves. And actually, I would argue, did okay for the Braves. The WRC Plus wasn't great for the year, but he did better in Atlanta than he did in Detroit. And defensively, he was fine at third base. They have him as the starter there. They added a backup catcher and Johnny Pareda to back up Shea Bengaliers. You know, right? They just the other day signed Luis Urias to be a utility guy. But, like, I like some of this young talent. Lawrence Butler is an exciting, like, he was a little streaky last year, but, I mean, he's got power. He's got speed in right field. J.J. Bleda in center is a good defensive outfielder with, you know, he had in a full season, he had like a 120 WRC plus. He was surprisingly good last year. Seth Brown in left, defensively, he's not good. Offensively, he's been better. He's probably the first guy they'd love to replace with somebody if they could. But, again, Langley's behind the plate. Tyler Soderstrom has a lot of promise still and just hasn't figured it out. I like Zach Gelof at second base. Jacob Wilson at short has the contact ability to be at least major league average. Brent Rooker at DH was amazing last year. I mean, he was like a 164 WRC plus, an OPS in the nines. He was amazing. He signed an extension this offseason. So am I wrong for like actually kind of liking this Athletics offense?
No, man, this offense is great. I mean, like you pointed out, Lawrence Butler, while he was streaky last year, he could turn it around and be as good as he was in those hot times this year. And the Phillies experienced that firsthand. They were really the first team that he went off against right there.
His coming out party. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was not a fun series. But yeah, Brent Rooker's great. Hip Hip Bleda. We're a big Hip Hip Bleda household. Shea Langeliers, he catches.
Oh, that's right. He's a South Alabama guy, isn't he? Bleda is. Isn't he?
Is he?
I thought so. Either way.
But anyway. No, Vanderbilt.
Oh, Vanderbilt. Okay, there you go. There you go. Bandy.
The lineup's fantastic in Oakland, or not Oakland anymore, in Athletics land. And I think that the offense is going to be very exciting, and it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. Now, the rotation, they did acquire some pieces, right? They signed Luis Severino to a surprisingly large deal. He had kind of had a renaissance year with the Mets last year. They had to spend money to not be in range of getting a revenue sharing grievance, right? They traded for Jeffrey Springs from the Rays. And so, like, Luis Severino, Jeffrey Springs, it's not an awful 1-2 punch. And then they've got a lot of bulk kind of guys that you have. There's some potential. JP Sears threw 180 innings last year. ERA was in the low fours, you know, some promise. Osvaldo Beto didn't get a ton of run, but had a decent ERA. Mitch Spence, they've got a couple other starters who are on the injured list because of Tommy John, Luis Medina, and Ken Waldichuk. And then they've got a ton of young depth guys in AAA that could be pieces. Gunnar Hoglund, I remember he was at Ole Miss. I was a fan of his. He came via trade. JT Ginn, Ryan Cusick, and Joey Estes. Mason Barnett, they acquired from the Royals this offseason. He was a former Auburn Tiger. Actually, I covered him here at Auburn. I don't hate the quantity of guys, but I just feel like you have to have somebody step up outside of Severino and Springs. And I do think Springs is probably a little bit stretched as a number two, especially coming back from injury like he is. He got like 30 innings last year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. They pulled the opposite of the Mets. They went with more quantity than quality. They even got a guy from the Mets in Luis Severino.
Or more quality than quantity.
Right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah. But yeah, the rotation, the depth is there. They're just gonna, like you said, have a lot of guys take that next step forward. And I wanted to say this at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
But I forgot. I have a question for you at the end of the show. I want to get your opinion on something. So, but yeah, they're gonna have to see a bunch of guys take a step forward if especially in this division.
Yeah. The bullpen, Mason Miller. Electric. Obviously, he's still there. The starting experiment's over. He's back to being a closer. He's one of the better ones in baseball from a velocity standpoint, from a stuff standpoint, right? He was over 2 WAR last year. They signed Jose Leclerc, former closer in Texas, to be their setup man. Jose Leclerc's a guy I was banging the drum for Atlanta to sign all offseason. One of those, he has experience closing. He had some velocity issues. It dropped a little bit. And some stuff issues. If you can fix some of that, then all of a sudden, you know, you can get another closing type guy on a setup man salary. And then some trades that they've made to bring in guys, Tyler Ferguson, guys like that. I don't hate the pen, but it does kind of feel like it's those top three and then just a bunch of dudes, right? It's just Mason Miller, Jose Leclerc, and the boys, as we like to say. And so you have to wonder about the potential impact that you can get here out of these guys. And like, if you have a day when Miller and Leclerc are not available for some reason, right? They've pitched these the last 2 days. I don't have confidence in anybody else in that pen to convert a safe situation for you. Although I'm sure the A's would love to be in a situation where they had three consecutive safe situations in three consecutive days. So do you need that? I don't know, but they've got a bunch of NRIs in camp to try to figure it out. And it feels like if there's a weakness to have going into the season, make it your bullpen, because you can always find bullpen relievers throughout the season.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very top-heavy bullpen, and it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that if Mason Miller and Jose Leclerc are both unavailable for a save one day, because, like you said, they're really only two options of who should be trusted to get a save. This is certainly the weakness of the team is the bullpen, because the offense is great. The starting pitching has the depth, and then the bullpen is Mason Miller, Jose Leclerc, and the boys.
I would argue, like, some of the conversations around the Severino signing was that they probably needed to get to like 95 or 100 million in payroll to not have a revenue sharing grievance, because they're back now to full revenue sharing recipients. They're sitting right now at 74 million. That's assuming their pre-arb players all make close to the minimum, right? Why would, especially if they don't think they're going to win the division, why wouldn't they just go and just grab a bunch of veteran relievers on one-year deals? Because that's a thing I feel like not enough major league teams are willing to do. And it's acknowledge, hey, we're not going to win the division this year. We're not going to be in it at the end of July. So let's sign a David Robertson. Let's sign a Kyle Finnegan. Let's sign all of these dudes to one-year deals. And if they have good production, then we can turn and flip them at the deadline, get a prospect for them, you know, get something of value. And it keeps us from having a revenue sharing grievance. Like, it makes perfect sense to me. And I don't know why more teams aren't doing that. I want to say Washington a couple seasons ago was pretty good. They brought in like three veteran relievers and then traded them all at the deadline. But I feel like more teams should do that, because every contender just about adds relievers late in the year. Oakland's the perfect team to do that, because it's Miller, Leclerc, and the boys.
Yeah, I don't get it either. And David Robertson's a perfect example, because while this is his age 40 season, in his age 39 season, he set a career high in innings pitched, and he had a 3 ERA for the Texas Rangers and a 132 ERA plus. It was one of the best seasons he's had in years, and he's still a free agent. So I don't get that either. I think that would be a great idea.
On that note, Buck Farmer put up 1.7 WAR for the Reds last year without pitching. Without, he got like one save. It was almost no save situations. And he just signed a minor league deal with the Braves. I'm like, nobody would give Buck Farmer $1 million when he was worth 1.7 WAR in middle relief last year. Like, what are we doing? How has a team not swooped in and grabbed a handful of these guys with the intention of like, hey, don't even bother, like, do a month-to-month lease, man. Like, don't even bother signing a full lease. Do a month-to-month because you're not going to be here after July.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. It's crazy, and I don't get it either, yeah. But I'm right there with you.
Okay, so final predictions for this A's team. Do we have them ahead of the Angels, or do we think that they're going to be in fifth now that we're assuming Trout's going to get maybe even 100 games? Do we still have the A's ahead of the Angels, or do we think that order might flip?
I think that this division as a whole is going to be one of the more exciting ones in Major League Baseball because you just don't really know who's going to win it this year. But I do think that with Mike Trout moving to right, it's going to be a lot closer for fourth than it was that we assumed yesterday before Mike Trout decided he was going to play right field. Mm-hmm. But I still think I give the nudge to the Oakland or the Sacramento Athletics for fourth place over the Angels. I think it's going to be very close, and I think both teams are going to be a lot better than they were last year, but I still think the Athletics finish fourth.
Can't believe I'm saying this. I think the lineup is deeper in Oakland. Yeah. It's deeper with the A's. Like it's the projections, the WRC plus projections from FanGraphs. Every position player on the roster but backup catcher Johnny Pareda is at least a 100 or better. Now, some of that's the ballpark. They're going to be in a minor league ballpark, Sutter Home Field in Sacramento. But like every single one of them offensively has promise. And if 2/3 of them pan out, I feel like this is a better offense than LA's. And you're right there with your rotation and your pen. So yeah, it's as much as I hate to say it. Yeah, I think the A's are going to be in fourth place. And is there a world they could compete for third? Maybe. I doubt it. But there's a world where they could compete for third. A lot of that depends on the rotation. If they have some of those young pitchers break out, not just come up and show they belong, but break out, you know, some of their top prospects, it could happen. But I still feel like this is a fourth place team. But it's not last.
Improvement. But yeah, my question for you real quick.
The question.
I was playing MLB The Show yesterday, and uh-huh. I was playing career mode, and in my career mode, I do a two-way player. While I was pitching, I struck out the side. So there's a debate in baseball. Do you have to strike out all three men in order, in your opinion? Do you have to strike out all three men in order for it to be striking out the side, or do you just have to get three strikeouts in the inning?
To me, you have to strike out the three batters you face. If you walk a dude in the middle of that, to me, you got three strikeouts. You didn't strike out the side because their side was four players because somebody got on via walk. So that's where I am. It's kind of like you don't, like, if you give up a walk in a no-hitter, you don't get a perfect game. We have a different term for that. Same thing here. Striking out the side is striking out all three batters you face in the inning, and that's all that they have come up.
That's
my thought. If you're listening and you have a different idea, let us know. I mean, I'm on Twitter at Crossy Baseball. He's at Troy B Baseball. Let us know if you think it should be something different. But to me, that striking out the side is getting all three in order. I do think there's a question about if one of those guys gets on via drop strike three and you strike out the fourth guy, that's still striking out the side, I think, because you struck out every batter that came to bat. It's not your fault that they got on because of a drop strike. And honestly, that is a dumb rule. If you got fooled on a pitch so bad that you struck out on a pitch that ended up in the dirt, why are we letting you run to first base? That is a dumb rule, and it probably should go away.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And it doesn't, I mean, I guess it happens kind of frequently, but it's, I agree with you. I think that should go away. In my opinion, I think that if you get three strikeouts, it's striking out the side because there are most commentators, even the ones who don't think that striking out the side is just three strikeouts, regardless of how many batters you face, they still say, oh, he struck out the side in order. And so for me, that addition of striking out the side in order is why I think that as long as you get three strikeouts, you struck out the side.
When you Google it, one of the things that pops up on that AI overview is there's disagreement about the exact definition of striking out the side. Yeah. So some people agree with you. Some people agree with me. We want to know what you guys think. I'm on Twitter again. We're both on Twitter. Leave a comment down below if you're on YouTube. In the meantime, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. Leave us a 5-star review if you would. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.